Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi, how are you?
Fine.
Do you think you'd be able to keep your mind on the job today?
What?
Well, your mum is about to have major surgery. She's having a hip replacement. And you are 4,000 miles away, separated by an ocean. That must feel very hard
for you. Yeah, I really wish I could be able to be here for her in this difficult time.
Because it's going to be a very intense period of rehabilitation. And I just know that you would want to be there in that house as she goes through that.
I wonder if every choice that I've made up until this point has been about not being near my mother when she's recovering from her hip surgery.
Your whole life has
been leading to being like, I wish I could help, but I'm across an ocean. This shit is going to fall solely on my father. Now, under normal circumstances, my dad is basically my mom's butler.
The relationship is a bit like a very big personality celebrity and their long-suffering PA.
Yes, it's like my mom. In so many ways, it's like my mother is a celebrity and my dad is the personal assistant from Devil Wears Prada who can't set any boundaries down. And I think it's possible that my mother will be so demanding in this time that my father will snap and kill my mother across the next 2 weeks. And my mother will die at the hands of my dad because her fault, blame the victim and the woman, she pushed him over the edge.
Do you think it would aggravate the situation if we got her a little bell?
I'm not kidding. When I was talking to her, she goes, you know, with my surgery, your father's going to have a lot to do for me or something like that. And then she rang. I think she has a bell on her desk.
Oh.
Not that she uses for him, but I think she will be using it. And then my father did a mock strangling her, like, we're going to have a great time, and pretended to strangle my mom.
Oh, no. Did your brain just flash forward to visiting your dad in prison and saying to him, oh, remember when you mock strangled her?
I think he'd knock her out with something.
Really?
I think so.
I think maybe a pillow in her sleep.
I don't think he has that strength.
Uh-huh.
You got it. You need a lot of strength to suffocate someone, I think. This is getting too depressing. We're not making light of women who are domestically abused. Mm. We're making fun of my mom and my dad, because it takes two to fucking tango, okay? He's walked into this situation, so I don't feel bad for him. I'm just worried that he might murder her. Anyway, Dad, stay strong. No murder. Mom, I know you can't control yourself in this situation, so I'm not even going to ask anything of you. But if he kills you, it's your fault.
All right, let's tell you about the guest we have for you on this episode. It is another Hollywood showrunner.
We're in a Hollywood zone right now, aren't we? And I don't mind.
She's Monica Bielecki. Now, she has written on some great shows over the years. She's written on The Leftovers, Friday Night Lights. She was a writer and a producer on the third series of Fargo. And now they have given her the keys to the shop. Mm-hmm. And she is the showrunner of Manhunt, which is on Apple TV Plus. You read a rave review of this in the New York Times.
The New York Times.
And it is about the pursuit of John Wilkes Booth in the days after the assassination of Abraham Lincoln. Let me ask you a question.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think a good maxim for life is not to be too synonymous with any one hat?
Yeah, that's good. If you're known for a hat, it's probably a bad thing.
I think so. Although this isn't borne out historically, Abraham Lincoln, Isambard Kingdom Brunel, the stovepipe hat. Whereas if I saw somebody in my day-to-day life or who kept popping up on the news with the same hat on, I'd think, oh, you hat wanker. When our son was at nursery, one of the other parents was synonymous with a very idiosyncratic hat.
Oh, that fucking guy with that fucking hat.
Was it like a Crocodile Dundee hat without the corks?
Yeah.
So let's try and think, what is the rule here? If you want to go down in history, be synonymous with one particular hat, but people will think you're a hat wanker in your own lifetime.
Yeah.
But who knows if that's part of what Abraham Lincoln was dealing with. Maybe we will find out in the remaining episodes. Manhunt made its global debut on Apple TV Plus with the first two episodes on Friday, the 15th of March, and new episodes debut Fridays, culminating in the finale on the 19th of April. And showrunner Monica Bielecki is our guest later.
So, I did what I was told, which is watch Josh Cullimore's recommendation, Madhu. Josh wrote in, he said, Sarah, this is the story of a real life Billy Elliot. There is dancing and it's a doc. And I said, yes, please. And I watched it.
Do you think we need to explain to the listener? Or do you think they will have already intuited that you have a very intense relationship with dance? The way you talk about it is as if you yourself used to be in the Moscow Ballet.
No, I am someone who saw the film version of A Chorus Line in the mid-80s, da-da-da-da-da-da, again, running around New York, going to auditions. And instantly I understood that that was the greatest life that any person could lead.
Leg warmers on.
Yes. So I decided that I could be a professional dancer. Mm-hmm. I started taking very intense dance classes around the age of 13. And I think it forms some key depressing aspect of my personality, because the message I was there to be the milk so the cream could rise to the top. I was kind of okay, but I was not going to go on and join the Joffrey Ballet either.
Because there is something interesting. You don't quite use the phrase as a former dancer, but there's a lot of that in the way that you talk about your history with dance. And what I'm learning is this would be like somebody who played football in school and maybe a few after school clubs thinking about themselves as a former footballer.
Yes, really what I am is someone who's good on the dance floor at a wedding.
But to bring it back to the documentary, the subject of this film, he is a dancer in a very different way to you, a different kettle of fish.
He might be a different kettle of fish. I'm also going to call him Anthony because he gets called Anthony and Madhu. I'll call him Anthony.
Okay.
That's what his mom calls him. So Anthony has this innate dance ability within him. He goes viral, and Elmhurst Ballet Academy, which is in Birmingham, finds out about this and offers him a scholarship to the academy.
I'm sorry, where was he living before? What was his life like?
Nigeria and medium.
Do you think I would like Madhu? Because a good documentary, it should be able to open up any world for you. However, I have a particularly traumatic relationship with dance, to the extent that people comment on my lack of dancing ability.
What you do have is a fabulous point. Oh my God, your arches. You have the feet of a true ballerina. They're so wasted on you.
I have a friend who was a dancer, and for a bit of extra money on the side, used to teach people how to do their first dances at their wedding. So in other words, she is used to working with people of very mixed abilities, shall mm-hmm. we say. And I remember telling her about my lack of dance ability. She said, come on, no, I promise you I could teach you. We stood up. She tried for about 3 minutes and said, oh, no, you're right. There's nothing to be done here.
There's some way that your body has of moving that is very, very strange. But what a point.
So just to summarize, we know that Madhu ticked your dance boxes. Mm-hmm. We know that it made you cry.
Yeah, it really made me cry.
So all in, satisfying.
Not quite.
Uh-huh.
So I like this film and I think it's feel good. But a reason I found it unsatisfying is there wasn't a good crescendo. So Madhu / Anthony finishes out this year and there's like an end of year dance. But Madhu's parents can't come because they're in Nigeria. So we get some footage of them watching like a live stream. Now, I feel that someone needed to get in there and go, we need to pay for 2 round trip tickets from Nigeria to England. And the grand finale needs to be all of them hugging.
And no documentary budgets can be tight. But if they can do it on Anton Deck's Saturday Night Takeaway, get Lum Polly or Tui or somebody to pay for it.
Yes.
Show us the logo of the airline or something just to pay for those tickets.
So it sort of for me at the end. But because it's really fun to compare things and say what's better than what else, it wasn't
Billy Elliot.
It wasn't Billy Elliot. But as someone who likes dance, if you like a boy dancing, go for it.
I just happened across my quick watch this week. Friday night, I was plopped down in front of the TV. You were with me. And on came The Assembly, Now, this is a one-off on BBC One made for Autism Awareness Week. And it is a talk show format, first and foremost. And Michael Sheen, the actor, is interviewed en masse by 35 neurodivergent people. I think for the most part, autistic people and learning disabled people. And it was fantastic.
It was great.
It is actually a French format. So they've done it over there and it's been a big thing. Macron has appeared on it.
Oui, Macron, je l'adore.
Is that just the way he looks or is it his politics?
Je ne sais pas beaucoup de son politique, mais j'aime son visage. Et généralement, j'adore la France. Francophile, moi.
This show, The Assembly, it's fantastic. And I want to be clear here. I do not mean that in a worthy way. It's like, you really must see this. It's important TV. Even though that is true, it is just, in its bones, a brilliant celebrity interview format. Mm-hmm. It's more honest than pretty much any talk show I can think of. So, for example, publicists can't say in advance, oh, we don't really want to talk about this, which I have a friend who has worked on a lot of talk shows, and she's got so many stories about that thing. Probably the most notable one being the show she was working on managed to bag an interview with Jerry Halliwell. Do you remember, she left the Spice Girls. Uh-huh. And then she was kind of taken under the wing of George Michael and went to live with him for a while.
Hey.
And then as she had her first single coming out, she got together with Chris Evans, the British one, not the Hollywood one.
Yes.
And it was a big tabloid sensation.
Okay.
So they managed to get Jerry Halliwell on this show at that moment. And the publicist says, oh, there's just three things Jerry won't talk about. The Spice Girls, George Michael and Chris Evans.
You're not interesting otherwise.
And the upshot of the assembly being very unfiltered is you get really unexpected questions. Because, for example, a lot of autistic people have special interests. The questions might be framed through that prism. So one of the questions was, are you afraid of bats? Which seems out of nowhere, but it provoked a really good anecdote.
Yeah.
But also, because in neurodivergence, a lot of the social niceties and rules don't make sense to a differently wired brain, you get some genuinely bold questions. So one woman came out, and I feel like this was one of the great moments of your life as a viewer, and just ask Michael Sheen what it is like to date someone who's only 5 years older than your daughter.
Yes, Michael Sheen generally comes across so well in this thing.
And there's nothing condescending.
No, and that's sort of why is that there is no sense that he's thrilled with himself for being there, which because, I imagine is actually quite hard in a way.
You often see that even if a celebrity is just talking to a member of the public. It's like they're very aware of their face and I'm a really good person just listening to a normal person. And I think there was nothing of that. I think he really relaxed into this group of people and gave them space.
I'd be really curious to see with other people if they are all as good as Michael Sheen.
I wonder if there's something about the format, the length of time they record for, and also that the guest becomes part of this group and then starts to interact in the rhythms of the group, if you see what I mean.
Yeah.
There was a lot of interest in his friendship with David Tennant. I think their friendship sits on the right side of being annoying. There's something charming about it.
Oh my God, completely.
But what is that
what
line?
Is
because
that?
So often when you find out celebrities are friends because they never stop talking about it, oh, give it a rest.
I remember when I worked for Mario Batali, him and Michael Stipe were besties and they were so thrilled with themselves for being like, you guys, you're not going to believe this. We're both famous. You didn't know it, but we're friends. Where are your old friends? Where's your friend from high school, asshole?
Here's what I want is a celebrity friendship where there's a big mismatch in how the careers have gone. So Ban Ki-moon and the guy from the Spin Doctors is what I want to say.
That is great.
The assembly then. I love the group, these 35 people. It was such a supportive group.
Yeah.
And I think it's important TV from a representation point of view. But beyond that, it's just good. It's a really entertaining format.
And I think my favorite part was just how nice they all are to each other. And again, when you see that stuff and it seems so genuine, you realize how not genuine most shit is.
Please nourish us with your email. Do you have any good dance documentary recommendations for Sarah? I know you really love that documentary about the making of A Chorus Line.
Oh my God! If you love dance, one of the best things you can ever do is watch the documentary called Every Little Step. It is about the casting of the 2005 revival of A Chorus Line, and it is so great.
What about this as well? Do I Have a Heart of Stone? What is the thing that made everybody else cry that just made you shrug?
Or are you allergic to cliche that's not admitting it's cliche?
What are the acceptable celebrity friendships that we know about? Good interview formats? And have we got anyone listening to this who's worked on a talk show who can give us those stories about what various people have refused to talk about? As well as your recommendations and thoughts on what you've been watching, please, the email address is...
fuckoff@firecrotchandnormcore.com. Do you know what rhythm I'm doing? What rhythm was that?
Oh, it was the Finnish Eurovision entry from last year.
Yes, so I'm doing...
Good.
Get us on to Patreon. Okay. We had a nice little last week. I need more. We are getting very close to a number per month that we make on our Patreon. And it's going to be really satisfying for us when we cross that threshold. You know when a number is almost, but not quite?
You want to see the number of miles on the clock go round.
Our milometer, it almost is about to go round to zero. Help it go round to zero. Help me buy my things. I need my things. I need my things. Remember that I need my surgery for my eyes.
I don't.
I do need it. It's going to really change things for me. I need your money to get, I think it's called the blepharthromy or something. That's what it's called, the blepharthromy. So help me get that. You want our milometer to tick over, don't you? I think, I'm not even going to say how many of you, but if a small handful of you join the Patreon this week, tick, 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 boom. First play by Jonathan Larson before Rent, Case of Care, tick, tick, boom. Join the Patreon. Satisfy me. If you cannot afford it, I accept, but then you better fucking email in. Also, tell a friend. We have not stopped talking about how you people should tell a friend. What are you going to get for it? You know. You get your watch list. You get your extended interviews. You get a video from my ma. This time next week, we better fucking have ticked over. And if we haven't, I'm going to be in a real sulk the whole time and you don't want to see what that looks like.
Patreon.com/they like to watch. And coming up later, we talk to Monica Bielecki. She is the showrunner of Manhunt on Apple TV Plus, about the pursuit of John Wilkes Booth after the assassination of Abraham Lincoln. Honest Abe. I think that nickname shows how times have changed.
Go on.
Because I don't think anyone is bestowing a positive nickname on somebody anymore. If somebody was called Honest Abe, it would be sarcastic and they'd be a lying bastard.
Yeah, that's funny.
But Honest Abe he was. And Monica Bielecki is our guest later. All right, we are not about to talk about watching the Curb Your Enthusiasm finale, the last ever episode, although it was excellent.
Yeah, it was really good, I thought.
We just watched it this morning. I would say this season has had some brilliant episodes. The first couple were very good. The last few were very good. Bit of a lull in the middle. It wasn't vintage, but he brought it in for a landing.
I thought he did a very nice job, Mr. David.
I thought we should mention it. What a legacy.
We've been watching along the whole time.
And I think forever, for the rest of my life, when I hear the HBO in my head, it will always go bum, bum, bum.
Ba-da-la-bum.
There you go. What a legacy.
What a legacy.
That amongst other things. The thing we did watch together this week is on Apple TV Plus, and it's called Steve! Exclamation mark. Open brackets. Martin! Close brackets. Documentary in two pieces. And it is about the life of Steve Martin. We started hearing good things about this. We put the first part on about a week ago, and we both fell asleep and thought it was quite boring. And then a few nights later, you put part two on and you called me down. And you said, this is really good. I don't understand.
Well, I had read all the reviews of it were saying that it was excellent and making a point of saying the second part was better than the first. And I was instantly so taken with it.
Part two is Steve Martin on camera now. And it flits between him talking about his life in the present day and him reminiscing about mm-hmm. his career mm-hmm. with conversations with either people there with him, like Jerry Seinfeld or Martin Short, or talking heads interviewees like Tina Fey, Eric Idle or Diane Keaton. Part one, all the interviews and all the reminiscing is in voiceover. So instantly you're a bit more removed from it. And then I think the other thing is, and this is true generally with documentaries, there is no good footage really of somebody's life before they're famous.
Yes.
Is there any video footage of the early part of your life?
I think probably the earliest footage of me is from this second cousin. And he's like, hey, Sarah, we just found this old footage of you. And I clicked on it. And it was me about age 3, and my dad is behind me. So I'm sat on a table, and his chin is sort of over my shoulder. And he's like, look it, honey, you can look at the table. And I'm going, yes, no. It's really sweet, and it's really moving to me because it's me and my dad. But otherwise, it is completely unremarkable. I send it to my father. All my father can do is talk about how alert I was. So he's like, did you see how alert you were? That is not how it is. Exactly how alert other children are. But my father has spent over 40 years quite obsessed by my alertness. And I wonder if that's like a thing that you cling to if your child doesn't make you proud in other ways.
That's what I was
thinking.
What
about your daughter? Well, she's always been very alert.
She's not very advanced in all these other ways that might suggest she was a child genius. But she is very alert.
But she noticed the world. This is my dad's whole thing. I noticed the world around me.
But basically, what you're saying is the filmmakers have got footage to work with when they make the Sarah Baron story.
Yes.
If you become a serial killer or whatever with me, you're notorious enough.
Don't you think at this
point
it'd be more likely that I become a serial killer than like very, very, very famous?
Yes, or a victim of some sort.
I think I'm most likely to be a victim of something. I think in a grieving process, I go crazy, join a cult, someone kills me. That's the most likely reason someone makes a documentary about me.
And as you're watching in this film, his meteoric rise, what is interesting to me is it's the hip kids who responded to him.
I really feel an insult coming my way.
No, I mean, that isn't something that has troubled you in your career.
Hip people like me. But my whole thing is hip people like me and not hip people like me.
I thought you told me that rich suburban people like you.
Rich suburban people fucking love me. Rich people generally like me. Cool people like me. Let me tell everyone. Jeff, you go away. This is just for the listeners. Okay, so I had this really cool thing happen. It was a few months ago. Two people who didn't both know they knew me then found out they both knew me. And the guy was saying to the girl, wait, Sarah, the cool one. They said Sarah, the cool one. Jeff insists. He insists that I'm not cool. I run into a friend this weekend and she and I were talking and I was saying this and she was saying that. And she goes, but you're just cool. Like, you're fucking cool. So I come home, I say to Jeff, a second person has reported that I'm cool. So I think I might be cooler than you're comfortable admitting to yourself.
I'm not saying you're uncool. I'm not saying you're a dweeb.
I am in cool category. Okay? Take it. Just deal with that. Deal with my coolness.
Okay. Why are you with me if you're that cool?
Because you're a sweetie.
Do you like Steve Martin in this film?
Yes, I do. I got my issues. So, Steve, I would have preferred for you to wind up with a woman your own age.
I'll tell you what's astonishing. He is extremely famous by the time he's 30. So this is around the time he makes The Jerk, around the time he gives up stand-up. And he looks 50.
Yeah, and he looks hot, but he looks 50.
And then in all those films in the 80s and 90s that you can bring to mind, he never looks any older than 50.
Yeah.
He went from looking 50 as a young man to looking 75.
Yes, it's
now.
Very, very strange.
In his ascendancy, his trademark look on stage was a white suit.
Ugh.
Gives me a lot of anxiety, though.
Oh, you're ready for him to dribble?
I can't go a day without staining myself in some way.
Neither can I. But I'll tell you what, he's into his art, Steve Martin.
Mm.
And I think a man into his art is the man who doesn't spill on himself.
Yes, because he's got a phenomenal art collection. He owns Picasso, Edward Hopper, Cindy Sherman, Roy Lichtenstein artwork. I don't think I would like to own a famous piece of art.
No, no, no. You can't own a famous piece of art.
Because what are you supposed to do? If you put it in the room that also has the TV in it,
then you're
feeling bad that you're watching TV when you could be looking at Starry, Starry Night or whatever it is you've got up there.
You can't have it on the ground level. It could be on a landing.
Do you think it's weird to spend time on a landing?
Everyone's doing this wrong.
Okay.
First of all, don't buy anything big. That's stupid. So the biggest thing you're going to get is like a foot by a foot. Maybe a little bigger than that, but not much. You're talking to someone, you're getting the temperatures right because you don't want, it's like history. You don't want to get fucked. You put it somewhere and you meditate with it every day. And
for how long?
That's a great question. I would say not more than 2 minutes. And I feel that if I owned a small, just the most modest Cezanne, that's what I would do. The apples, yes. And I'd sit with the apples and I'd go, apples, and I'd really feel I'd feel my privilege. I'd go, thank you for the apples. Beauty, purity. I'm not looking at my phone. We live and we die. When was Cezanne going? 18s, 1860s? I don't quite know. But like, I was sort of probably able to just get the correct general neighborhood. And you're going, history, everything is but a flash. I love my family. What is anything other than family? Sorry if you have no family. And you just remember your values. And then you return to the apples, and then you're done. And you do that every day as a meditation. That's what you should do with a really fine work of art. Maybe you have a beautiful jewel. Why don't you stare at your jewel? I love staring at jewels. You ever want to find me? Go. I will often be in the gems department at the Natural History Museum. I'm not there all the time. I'm a busy lady. But if you die and our son is out of the house, I'm going to be going to look at gems all the time. Meteorites. Guys, these things can give us perspective. Gems, meteorites, paintings.
I'll tell you something that never gets old for me is seeing Steve Martin's friendship with Martin Short.
Yeah, it's really... Oh my God, I know we don't want to keep going back to things we've already said, but it's very The Assembly. That is a non-annoying friendship.
I react to Martin Short appearing in a film, a TV show, anything, like a dog reacts to its owner coming home. I'm just always so pleased to see him.
He is, he's such a genius.
Something I think is admirable about Steve Martin is that he has a young daughter. I think she's about the same age as our son. So
I think
seven
maybe
or eight,
she's a little older. Maybe.
But she is not allowed on camera at all.
Here's what I would say. So first of all, yes, of course. I think you're fucking crazy if you put your kid on camera, whatever, whatever, whatever. What I don't love, and I hold Steve to a very high standard, is it's not just preserving your child's anonymity. It's also your child as accessory. So my only note would be, of course, it's good that they didn't use her. But at one point, she comes in to give him a big hug. And they put a little like
animation,
animation over her. Yeah. And so what it is doing is it's really showing him as a great dad. But I'm telling you, I'm also thinking what I know about showbiz. And he doesn't spend a lot of time with his daughter. He just doesn't. And he could if he wanted to. And he doesn't. Because he's busy working all the time or a lot of the time.
Is this like how you knew for sure that Seth Meyers' wife didn't have a career of her own?
Yes.
And then she turned out to be a high profile human rights lawyer.
But I'm just saying that if you're going to show me your daughter hugging you in this way, show me your diary. I'm not saying don't work, but this is not a 9-to-5 situation where you're always there for the school pickup and you could make the choice to be. And just like fucking be honest about that. That's all. And I love you, and I think you're a genius, and I'm really grateful to the work that you put out into the world as a fan.
Well, I look forward to Steve Martin faxing you his diary to prove you wrong.
I'm really into being proven wrong. You know why? Doesn't happen very often.
So we really love this. And if you do what we did and you put on episode one, you think, oh, I don't know if I can be bothered. Muscle through, push through, break on through to the other side.
Can I slightly disagree with you?
Yeah.
Watch the second half. Then if you're moved, watch the first half and then feel the flow back into as much of part two as you want to rewatch, which you'll probably want to rewatch. That's how good it was.
Have you watched the Steve Martin documentary? Did you prefer part one to part two? What are other examples of things where it's okay to skip a part?
Oh, that's a great question.
Even series, because often people have this compulsion to start on season one of something.
Sure.
And sometimes things don't hit the stride until a bit later on. What are examples of that? Our email address is...
fuckoff@firecrotchandnormcore.com.
And next, we talk to Monica Bielecki. She is a showrunner of a hit show on Apple TV Plus, Manhunt, about the pursuit of John Wilkes Booth following the assassination of Abraham Lincoln. He liked to seance Abraham Lincoln.
I think I'm going to have a tarot reading or like maybe a burning ceremony. It's just a thing I'm thinking about with a white witch. She's apparently like part-time comedian, part-time white witch. I'm very open to this. And I feel more open now knowing that Abe Lincoln himself was into a seance.
What will you be burning?
You can like write things down. Here's what these people do. They like write down negative thoughts and then burn them.
I think you writing down your negative thoughts would be like the Towering Inferno.
The truth is, Jeff, you have way more in the way of negative thoughts than I do.
Maybe so.
It's not a competition. We're both miserable.
Now, you might think this is some kind of ad or sponsorship, but it isn't. It is a little Nepo-friendly interlude where we tell you about a book that our friend, Tom Selinsky has written.
But if you are some kind of brand manager or you've got connections, I just want you to listen to how good I am at selling the fucking shit out of this.
This is genuinely a great idea. Tom is this science fiction fan who realized that he had this huge Star Trek-shaped gap in his knowledge. And so he decided to watch every single TV series and film spin-off and then write about what he saw. And this is the first part, from the original series to the end of Enterprise.
Can I just put my cards on the table and say I don't give a shit about Star Trek? So this is the worst possible book for me to ever have to read. But Tom, if I may say, has such a wonderful way with words. And it's so also about a journey that he goes on. So, you know, it's like you can be not a sports person, but then you watch Last Dance and you're like, wait, I'm not a sports person, but this is amazing. This thing is still for you.
Because in a way, it's about TV as much as it's about Star Trek.
Obviously, if you are a goddamn nerd, you're going to love it more than us cool kids. But even as a cool kid, there is a journey and just wonderful insight about television nestled in there for you as well.
The book is called Star Trek, Discovering the TV Series by Tom Selinsky.
Go get it. If you got a friend in your life who is a nerdy, there's no question in your mind that this is their next gift. It's available where all books are sold.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
When you don't have a show in production, where are you sitting and writing? Are you a coffee shop person? Do you do it from home? Where do your juices get flowing?
I tend to need to leave home. I coffee shop hop because my attention span is, it's weird. Like I could write for 10 to 12 hours, but not in the same place. So I stay for a couple hours somewhere and then I move. It's weird, but that's what I do.
Do you like being a regular? Do you like going into a place and them saying, hey, Monica, or do you prefer the anonymity?
A little of both, which because I hop around, it works. I also am a big walker. So if I am staying at one place, I'll get up and I'll walk for a while and then I'll come back.
I can give you a fact about this. So that is a thing. I read a book about it over the weekend. There is a thing that going for a walk when you're in the middle of doing something creative can give you this burst of new energy or a different perspective. Do you want to know how long that lasts for?
Maybe I don't want to know. How long?
Take a guess.
10 minutes?
6 minutes.
But you know what? Sometimes there's a gem in that 6 minutes that you can solve sitting drinking lattes.
When I hear that someone can write for 10 to 12 hours, I feel this mix of joy for you, but also like profound rage and envy because I don't have that. Is that something that you had to train yourself to do? Or is that just a thing you noticed decades ago? Like, oh, here's part of my skill set. I can sit for 10 hours and do this thing.
I'm not saying I could do that today. But okay. What happened was I was working on Friday Night Lights and I was the lowest level writer. And one day we had a script we had to turn around by the next day. And basically we had till it was lunchtime. We basically had till the end of the day. And that just kicked it off for me where I was like, oh, there's no procrastination. Like this is your job now. And there's no waiting for inspiration. you have to write these three scenes by 5 o'clock. And I don't know what it was, but that experience that day just turned a switch in me where I was able to do it when I need to, as opposed to everything being perfectly ready for you to write, if that makes sense.
Specifically with something like Manhunt, because there is a different cadence to the present day cadence in the way that the characters talk. How do you shift into that gear? What are your points of reference? Is that research? Is it a gut feeling? What is that?
So some of it is research, but I will say we don't have any recordings from this part of the 19th century when Manhunt takes place. So none of us, the actors and I, we don't know how these people sounded. We have their writing, which is extremely, I would call it overwritten now, you know, like their style. But I was very interested in the idea that Booth was a Shakespearean actor. This was a time when Shakespeare was extremely popular in America. And the wit of language was something I leaned on, especially for the relationship between Lincoln and Edwin Stanton, played by Tobias Menzies, because they were both very successful lawyers. So when I wrote those scenes, I was sort of thinking, well, how would two lawyers talk about this who are also friends?
Can I ask you a little bit about casting specifically? The two main characters are from this side of the pond, Tobias Menzies and Anthony Boyle. Do you have a little bit, are you a little bit of an Anglophile?
I would say yes. I used to write with partners there. I used to direct theater there. And I love the literature and the culture of Britain. But I don't know how much that came into play in terms of casting Anthony and Tobias. Anthony jokes that he has a face that looks like it's never seen a cell phone. So I think that is part of it. Booth was a Shakespearean actor, like I mentioned before. And so I wanted a little bit of theatricality to the role. And then Tobias and I, we had friends in common. I had actually seen him perform when I was like 20 years old. I saw his last shows at drama school, and I literally remember the moment I saw him on stage thinking, that guy is going to be a star. And I think he brings such an authenticity. You know, you see him and you just believe you're in 1865.
How did this become your project? How did you think this is the next thing that I want to be working on?
I think because of changes in our country and seeing people wait 8 hours in line to vote. And the question of, has the Civil War ended or has it transmuted into something else, was sort of ripe for me. So I just was reading a lot about that time period. And then when I came across the figure of Stanton, and I realized that essentially no one was president from the time that Booth shot Lincoln till about 12 hours later when Johnson was sworn in. And I'm like, this guy was our de facto president for 12 hours. How are we never even taught him in school? So that fascinated me. And also I knew specifically that I didn't want to write an anti-hero. I wanted to write a hero. Mm-hmm. I felt that we were telling too many stories in Hollywood that were anti-heroes. And for me personally, what I needed at that time was a hero in the classic sense.
You were holding out for a hero.
I was. I still am.
Can I ask you about how it works with Apple? So you're on an, so they liked your writing and they put you on an overall deal where they want to see what you're coming up with. What does that look like in practice? Is it a check-in every month where you say, this is what I've been thinking about?
I'm not sure how it is for everyone else, but for me, the way it worked was I came in and I loosely pitched a few ideas that I wanted to work on. And they liked a few of them. And so I think that helped because they could see more than one of my ideas being a show that they would do. Once I had the deal, I focused on one of those ideas, which wasn't Manhunt. It was more of a monster allegory show. It was very different. And I couldn't crack it. And I said, I like this world. I can't quite figure out what the episode of the week is. And so I need to put this aside. Is that okay with you? And they were like, yeah. And so then I started working on Manhunt and that took off. I did that for 4 years and it was a great situation. And now I'm a free agent. So it's an odd thing to have a show that's doing very well on at the same time looking for work.
Yeah, yeah, I bet.
So it's a very, a strange situation.
How ready were you for the jump from being a writer to being a showrunner?
I was a working TV writer for about 15 years. And I probably was more ready than most people because most people with my experience had two or three shows before me. So even though I was a quote unquote first time showrunner, I think I've been underestimated for a long time.
You had a lot of experience beyond a writer's room and beyond being a writer on set.
I didn't have a whole lot of experience with that, but ultimately it's about having a vision and taste and making sure that it's consistent. I think some people think that we're just the writers, but we do the casting. It's our cuts of the episodes. And I think a lot of showrunners have been a bit shy about talking about that publicly, but I think it does a disservice to the fact of that we do almost everything that like a director of a movie does. It's a weird job where you have to wear a lot of hats, and sitting in a coffee shop writing a script is such a different skill to picking a palette with your production designer, right, or describing to your composer how you want the music to sound. It's so many different hats, but I really loved it and really enjoyed it.
Let me ask you a question. From a theatre director's point of view, you're staging a play. The president is shot. Do you think you could down the curtain, have an interval, and then carry on?
Well, it was interesting filming that sequence because the tragedy of it. Because a lot of times, you know, it's become kind of a joke. Oh, Mrs. Lincoln, but did you enjoy the play? You know,
I mean, it's a great joke.
It is a great joke. At the same time, when you're really in it and you realize how tragic it was that they had let their guard down and they were basically on date night after having lost a son and this war being so brutal. And I think we all had a sort of awe and honor that we were able to do it. It is semi-unprecedented that so many African-American artists have told this story. A lot of times these large-scale period pieces are not made by people like us. And I don't think it was lost on us, the fact that we descend from former slaves and enslaved people, and that we were getting to tell this story that's a part of what happened to emancipation was very special for us, I think.
I wanted to ask you a little bit about how you approached this show structurally. You've got to get the assassination in fast because that's what sets your story in motion. But you also, you know that as the viewer, we need like a little bit of time. Well, we need more than a little bit of time with Lincoln as a character. We can't just have him gone in the first 10 minutes of the show.
Right.
How did you crack that for yourself? How did you know what to do?
I think that I just instinctively felt that the assassination has to happen soon because everybody knows it's coming. It's one of those questions of suspense versus surprise. You're not going to surprise anyone. So all I have is suspense. How did it happen? Why did it happen? Who was involved? Is it what you thought? And I felt exactly what you're saying, Sarah. I couldn't do it in the first 5 minutes. Then you're losing somebody immediately who you have no real time with. I felt that we needed to just see him alive and see what he meant to people and see what he cared about before we lost him so that it really would hit you more emotionally.
It's so funny. I've known who Hamish Linklater was for years, and it was only watching your show. I was like, he's looked like Abraham Lincoln the whole time. Like, that's who it was. Like, oh, right. How are you ever going to cast anyone else? That's who he's been looking like for 15 years.
That's so funny. We actually were all in D.C. recently, and he went to the Lincoln Memorial, and he took this selfie of himself where his face is right under Lincoln's face. Right. It's crazy. And he's 6'4", which is so wild, too.
Yes.
I think I really liked about the show is I can feel too removed from any kind of historical or period drama. And there's a thing that you do on the show, and it feels almost like I can step from this world into that one without it being jarring.
Yes, I'm so glad you noticed that. I didn't want it to feel like a stuffy museum piece. I wanted it to feel as modern as it felt for them in the time. So, for example, Tobias and I decided not to give him the beard. What I learned is that beards at that time were very modern. They were something that actually Lincoln helped to make fashionable because it was at a time when the men who were at war would shave and their razors could give them gangrene or tetanus. Ooh. a lot of them started growing beards because it was just healthier. So the idea of this lead character having this sort of Santa Claus scraggly beard to me was going to feel not like how a beard would have meant at that time, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So it was just all these micro decisions that add up to it feeling fresher.
How much of an eye have you got on Manhunt as it's out in the world? Are you watching the reaction to it? Are you obsessing over the numbers? Do you get the numbers from Apple?
I'm getting some kind of graph, I heard, in a week. I was on a roller coaster of reviews for a little while. And then Deborah, my good friend, she sent me like 4 hit shows that we all think of as like flawless shows. And she sent me the original reviews from when they first came out. It was absolutely fascinating. Yeah. It's like Game of Thrones lacks imagination. Fleabag. It's just insane. Yeah. So it really helped put it all in perspective.
Before you go, Monica, what are you watching at the moment?
I am watching Hazbin Hotel, which is an adult animated series on Amazon. And it's animation with a lot of swear words and really cool LGBTQ characters. And it's essentially people in hell at a hotel. It's very charming with musical numbers. And then I'm also watching documentaries. I watch a lot of nonfiction because I spend a lot of my day on fiction. So I love the Paul Simon, the Alex Gibney documentary In Restless Dreams, I think it's called. It's beautiful. It's so moving to see Paul Simon still writing music. He lost hearing in one of his ears and the inspiration comes and goes and, you know, trying to figure out my next thing after having worked on this for a few years. It was just so moving to see someone so prolific, still at it, still seeking, still creating at 80 something.
I don't want to keep saying this, but like I do feel she really liked me. And may I just say, I really liked her as well. And I feel like I'm excited to watch this woman fly.
And that's what she's doing. Manhunt is streaming now on Apple TV Plus, and the finale drops on the 19th of April.
We're in the inbox. This first email comes from Katie, who writes, "Dear Firecrotch and Normcore, I'm getting in touch in response to Jeff's not watching Peaky Blinders because of who recommended it to him. I couldn't remember programs I haven't watched because of the recommender, but I am the person who recommends stuff to my brother, who will then quite actively take against whatever TV program it is. A big recommendation was Betty, the New York-based drama about a group of young female skaters trying to carve out their space in the male-dominated skateboarding world. Never heard of it. Series 1 I loved. The photography, music, story, and characters, all played by non-actors. That sounds good. My brother used to live in New York. I thought he will love this. No, not interested. We almost had a row because I mentioned it one too many times, which was probably twice. I can't remember the last time my brother... Well, I can remember the last time my brother and I argued. 2004, he stormed out of a bar. We were on a family holiday. And I don't remember quite what happened, but I was making fun of him. He had a girlfriend at the time, and he'd like written lyrics of a song on a CD that she'd given him. It was a CD and a romance, and I was making fun of it. And he shot up at a table and walked outside. Like, he couldn't be around me anymore. And then I just remember my parents going, "What did you do?" Their fucking son, in a way that was borderline violent, storms out of a restaurant. And what's the question? What did you do?
I think this is quite a wide border at the borderline here.
There was no way he was going to hit anyone. That's not what I mean. But there was a physically aggressive way that he exited. And what's the question? Now, I think it was my fault. I think it was probably being difficult. But they were just like instantly on his side, which is a cycle that's been going on since childhood. I will continue. There was the bear. My brother is very cool and fashionable, and he liked Eben Moss Bachrock when he played Desi and Girls. Yeah, he was really good. He's very good. "You should watch The Bear. You'll love it," I said. Again, no, not interested, followed by a very mean comment about Jeremy Allen White looking like a goldfish.
He does look a little like a goldfish.
I see what your brother means. Look, I want to say this, Katie. I'm on your side. Your brother sounds a little bit... He sounds like a hot bitch. Is he also a nice guy? These guys always think they're nice. I don't know. But I'm a little bit on his side about Jeremy Allen White. I'm just going to say that to you. A year later, someone else has recommended him The Bear, and now he's desperate to see it. I have decided to never recommend anything to him again. One of my best friends says her brother, also very cool and fashionable, is exactly the same. Oh, so these little bitches are better than everyone else, huh?
They just don't like being told by their sisters.
Well, listen, your brother sounds like he's walking a thin line here. I don't know what I think of him, but you seem like an adorable darling. Anyway, Katie finishes. I recommend Betty if you haven't seen it. Series 1, Series 2 wasn't as good, but clearly don't take my word for it. Katie, thank you.
This comes from Anne, who says, Dear Sarah and Jeff, I watched a Netflix documentary that I haven't been able to get out of my head. It's called Take Care of Maya. I hesitate to recommend it because it tells a very grim and tragic real-life story of a mother suspected of medical child abuse, stroke Munchausen's by proxy.
I always need a beat before I remember it's not a cheese. Like, I can never remember which is push and pull, and my brain always needs a half a second. Similarly, Munchausen, I always go, cheese? No, abuse.
Very much not a cheese. Anne continues, My interest is in its reception and the way the film appears to have impacted a major court case about its subject. I went down a rabbit hole listening to grim podcasts about the whole situation, all of which confirm my initial feeling that Take Care of Maya is highly partial and irresponsible filmmaking. I think there's a lot of that about, actually. None of this is exactly a fun recommendation, but just an observation for your weekly inbox. Some things that I watched recently that weren't this much of a bummer. The film Bottoms.
Someone's told us about that. Maybe Rosie.
The film American Fiction. Oh, a friend of ours.
That Jeffrey Wright one.
Gilmore Girls is something to watch with your kids.
Okay. You hate it.
No, it's just a hole. It's a complete hole in my cultural knowledge.
Yeah.
She also says, Russell, meaning Russell T. Davies, was such a lovely interviewee. I'm keeping my fingers crossed for Sally Wainwright for you.
No. You can't. This is what I want to say. You can't keep. First of all, Anne, oh my gosh, thank you. But you can't. We can't get her.
Can't you ask a white witch to manifest her for you? Is there nothing you could burn?
I would love to talk to Sally Wainwright, but I wouldn't love it so much that she becomes my top priority for the White Witch meeting.
And finishes, very much enjoying your weekly voice notes too, no matter what the topic.
Now that's because on occasion, Jeff will ask me what I voice note about. And I told you a couple weeks ago, and you were, I want to say, disgusted with me because of how dumb you thought it was.
No.
You were disgusted.
I can't even remember.
You were disgusted. I'm not going to, because you don't get to know what the voice notes are about if you don't join the Patreon. Join the Patreon. It was very meta, and Anne is letting me know that her love is uncondish. This next email comes from Yael, who is a fan of the pod, but this is also hate mail.
Oh, no.
It's not really hate mail, but it's Yael wants to have a word.
It's been a while since you've had some hate mail.
Yael wants a word.
Okay.
And I'm going to give her her time. Yael writes, fire crotch. So there's already a sternness to her voice. I am not old, and I do live in a city. I am also not demonstrably psychotic. I love National Theater Live. Watch Vanya. This is because last week I was talking about how people are fucking nuts if they watch this shit, which I still
can't. When they go and see the theater at the cinema.
Theater at the cinema? Are you kidding me? I love National Theater Live. Watch Vanya and tell me it's not a fully engrossing and enriching experience. At the Opera House in the Playhouse Theater, it was freaking brilliant. Yes, I took my aged mother, not psychotic, and lives in the suburbs of a major city. I don't know, Yael. I don't know about you people who enjoy spending time with your mother. Like, if you were to be like, and it's fucking awful, but I got to do this shit with her, I'd be like, all right, cool. But now that you're like, I had a great time with my mom seeing the theater at the cinema. I'm struggling. Yael continues, I need you to see it. Andrew Scott. That's all I have to say. Okay, Yael, I take your challenge. I can't tell you when I'll watch this, but I'll watch it. I will keep an open mind, which is never my strong suit, but I will try. I like Andrew Scott a lot, but people love loving Andrew Scott. That's all I'll say. And I don't not love Andrew Scott. I just actually haven't seen that much as he's in. But I'm just making the point. He's one of these dudes. People love to love him, baby. All right, Yael, I accept your challenge. I'll be reporting back at some stage. I'm sorry that I offended you. They are my core beliefs. We'll see if I've got it wrong.
We'd love to hear from you. Send us an email. Hopefully not hate mail. Maybe you could send a message in support of Sarah in this terrible altercation she's got into with long-term listener Yael. Or maybe you want to defend Yael.
Yeah, I'd like to know, like, am I being a little bitch? Am I being a little snotty bitch? Or is Yael kidding herself? This is what I want to know.
But more than that, your TV recommendations and thoughts, please.
Yes, please.
The email address is...
fuckoff@firecrotchandnormcore.com.
This week, Monica Bieleczki liked to watch Has Been Hotel on Amazon Prime and In Restless Dreams, the music of Paul Simon, which we can't even watch over here yet. It's on a thing called MGM Plus. We don't have that.
Interesting.
Makes us feel like country cousins.
Yeah.
Rubes. Sarah liked to watch Madhu on Disney Plus. I like to watch The Assembly on BBC iPlayer. And we like to watch Curb Your Enthusiasm, which is on Sky and Now TV and HBO in the States. And Steve! Exclamation mark, in parentheses, Martin, on Apple TV Plus.
At the time of recording, something is ahead of us. At the time of your listening, perhaps we'll be right in the middle of it. We're going to a capybara farm.
Not somewhere where they farm capybaras for meat or milk them.
No, we're just parents making a child's dream come true. It's not a big deal. Mommy and Daddy, are we going away for holiday? Nope, we've got to work. Pick out one thing you want to do. Can I touch a capybara? Okay. So we're going to a farm to touch capybaras.
In Hounslow. Which I don't think is their natural habitat.
No, probably not. Anyway, wish me the best. I'm kind of looking forward to it. I like to connect with nature. Oh, and in the morning, I'm making my son. I've had a wonderful breakthrough with my child. Which is, I always want him to garden with me. And he's like, he will never go with me to the Columbia Road Flower Market. We had a breakthrough yesterday morning. He does like to garden. He had a great time with me. He just doesn't want to go and buy the flowers. I'm thinking, honey, that's the best part. But you like the
sewing.
He likes to sew and he likes to kind of like clip and trim. Fine, I'll take that. Tomorrow morning, do you know what he and I are going to do?
I do not.
Do you want to take a guess? What am I going to make him do with me? What am I going to break out? My power hose.
Oh.
A few birthdays ago, Jeff bought me a power hose. It's probably my favorite birthday present of all time. If you don't have a power hose, oh my God. I will even tell you to buy a power hose before you join our Patreon. You need a power hose. It's so fuck. It's physically the most satisfying thing I've ever done. And I'm bringing my son in. He's going to be 8 soon. I'm going to get him started early. And we are going to it's like putting a fresh coat of paint on the floor of your back garden. It's fucking fabulous.
When you are using this power hose, I think you feel godlike, like God would feel using a pressure washer.
That's because of the power. I'll be power hosing with my son, then I'll be touching capybaras. What a life I lead. I hope yours is equally fulfilling. See you next Tuesday, boys and girls and everybody. Bye.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.